It's Sunday, the 7th of February, 2016. Happy birthday to Isaiah Thomas. Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by moneyball.com.au and Andrew 132-7-6-7-6. Almost got his name wrong. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be a sponsor of the podcast like Andrew 132-6-7-6, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes, and there you go, bang, you are the sponsor of the podcast for a day. Not only do you get the naming rights on the podcast, but it helps the podcast out tremendously in getting up the iTunes rankings. So thank you to Andrew for doing that, and thank you to everyone else who's left such fantastic reviews. If you're a new listener to the show, welcome. I hope you enjoy what we've got on for today. We're going to be looking through the games from Saturday, going through the four games for Super Bowl Sunday, previewing those, giving out some lines of the night, performances of the night. You don't need any more. Oh, you know what? Before we do that, before we get into the lines of the night, let's talk about the Facebook and the Instagram contests from Saturday. On Facebook, the contest was, guess how many points Devin Booker will score. He scored 18. No one guessed it. Oh, that sometimes happens. On Instagram, though, we had the separate Instagram contest, which we have each day. What you had to guess was how many combined rebounds, steals, and blocks will Nerlens Noel have. He had 4 rebounds, 4 steals, and 3 blocks. That totaled 11. We had 3 people get that right. We had Joakim, who's on Instagram at Jelgmork. Sure, I got that incorrect. We had at just be aware and at 24 peanut. So 3 people guessed 11 for Nerlens Noel. There'll be more tomorrow. I haven't decided exactly which ones we're going to have up for the Instagram and Facebook contest, but make sure you are following on Instagram at redrock_bball and on Facebook at facebook.com/redrockbasketball and joining in those little contests we have each day and seeing if you can guess the correct amount. Now that we're done with that,
let's get to it.
The monstrous line of the night goes to Kevin Durant of the Oklahoma City Thunder. He is, I think it's safe to say that he's fully back. He looks incredible. He's putting up fantasy lines that are out of control. 40 minutes against the Warriors wasn't enough to get the Thunder the victory, but 40 points and 3 triples, 14 boards, 5 assists, 1 steal, 2 blocks, hit all 13 of his free throws, and went 12 of 25 from the field. You can't really ask for much more than that. Yes, Durant turns it over a lot, but if you've heard me on the show before, you know I don't care. I don't care that he turns it over 5 times. It doesn't really matter. He's averaging over 3 turnovers a game, but he's still the second best player in fantasy this season behind Steph Curry. And over the last 2 weeks, he's right up there as the number one guy. Over the past 2 weeks, he's putting up some fantastic numbers. He's averaging in these last 2 weeks almost 35 points a game. 3 triples, 10 rebounds, 5 assists, a steal, and a block a game. On 50% shooting and 91% from the free throw line. There is nothing wrong with anything that Durant's doing. Those numbers are all absolutely incredible. He is looking better and better. It took him a while to shake off the rust, the hamstring issue earlier on in the season as well. The rust, not that it took him a while to shake it off. He was dreadful in preseason, to be honest. And he wasn't great to start the season, but he is motoring on all cylinders. If you own him, you're pretty confident with what's happening with him now, and you're well aware of the sort of performances that Kevin Durant is putting up at the moment. The waiver wire line of the night is Matt Barnes of the Memphis Grizzlies. Barnes played some extra minutes in this one. It was an overtime game against the Mavericks. He got 36 minutes off the bench, 17, 11, and 5 with 5 triples and a block on 6 of 10 shooting. So obviously a lot of efficiency there with Barnes. As well, he has been sort of an up and down player this year, but even saying that, he's a top 100 guy over the course of the season. He's top 90 over the last 2 weeks, he's top 60 over the last month, and he's owned in about 25% of leagues. Yes, there's frustrations at times he'll play 17 minutes, but fantasy seasonal leagues, it's not based on one day. It's based on what's this guy giving me overall. And you look at any sort of split from Barnes this season, even if he doesn't get to 30 minutes, the numbers are still good enough. His last week, which hasn't been awesome, his last 2 weeks averaging 24 minutes, but still giving you 2.2 triples, 6 rebounds, 1.2 blocks, 0.8 steals. They're all really good numbers, obviously. You know, over the course of the season, he's almost a triple one player. So is it 1.5 threes, 1.1 steals, and 0.8 blocks. Over 5 rebounds a game. These are all good numbers. Barnes is way under-owned. I think he should be considered at least in all 12 team leagues. There's a lot of a mess on the wings in Memphis with Tony Allen, with Courtney Lee, with Jeff Green, and with the, even the power forward spot with Zach Randolph. But Barnes, even in these limited minutes, he's able to produce for fantasy. And one of those guys that falls into that situation where, oh, he's not scoring in double digits, maybe he's bad. Well, he's not, because he's doing other things positively in other categories. You know, he's giving you positive threes, positive steals, positive blocks, you know, average rebounds, and a really nice free throw percentage as well. So someone, Matt Barnes is someone to consider. There will be ups and downs, and he's not a, oh my God, I've got to go and grab this guy and spend all of my fab or drop someone really valuable to add him. But he's sitting on waiver wires all over the place, and there are plenty of guys that I know that people have got on their rosters that I would much rather have Barnes on than have that player. Brandon Jennings is a name that springs to mind. I would much rather have Matt Barnes than Brandon Jennings this season. He does a lot in the little categories, and sometimes that can be hard to see. So there you go. I'm alerting you to that fact. The young gun of the night. It's almost a guarantee that this guy is going to be the young gun of the year. Karl Anthony Towns of the Minnesota Timberwolves. 41 minutes for Towns, 26-17, a huge night again. Had an assist, had 3 blocks, and went 12 of 19 from the field. Is there anything this guy can't do? He will be a first-round pick next year. I am almost guaranteed. I obviously haven't done my projections for next season. It'd be a little silly doing it now, but I am almost guaranteed that he will be a top 12 player next year, probably in that 10 to 12 range. Maybe not a first-rounder in a 10-team league, but almost assuredly in a 12-team league. He is a top 5 dynasty league asset, if not top 3. He has got upside almost as big as anybody in the league. He can be one of these guys who contributes positively in every single category: points, threes, rebounds, assists, steals, blocks, field goal percentage, free throw percentage, low turnovers. He can do it in every single area. The talent that this guy is showing is incredible. I've said it a million times. I thought he was going to be awesome. I didn't think he was going to be this awesome, because I thought that the Timberwolves would put a handbrake on him and go, look, you're only playing 25 minutes. But hey, they've unleashed him. He is averaging 35 minutes over the last 2 weeks, 22 and 12.5, half a three, half a steal, 2 blocks, 60 and 83. Please tell me how you can complain about any of those numbers. He is going to be an absolute animal. He will be a top 5 player in 3 years or 4 years time, almost guaranteed. By the end of his rookie contract, he will be that. Probably in his third season, he will be a top 5 player. I can't say enough. If you haven't watched much Minnesota, you need to watch it. You need to watch this guy play. You need to look at what he does. You need to also avert your gaze to the offense that Sam Mitchell runs, but you need to watch what Karl Anthony Towns can do, because he is literally an incredible player. And we haven't seen a rookie like this come in since, I don't even know when the last one was. He's better than Davis was as a rookie. Chris Paul, maybe. Is he better than Chris Paul as a rookie? I know that's going a long way back. There's probably someone that I'm missing. Let me know if you can think of someone who is a better rookie than what Towns is. I'm struggling to find anyone who's been better than him in recent memory. The dud of the night is Ersan Ilyasova of the Detroit Pistons. Only the 18 minutes here for Ersan. Not a great line. 4 points on 1 of 8 shooting. At least he hit a 3. No rebounds, no assists, no steals, no blocks. Really not a good line from Ersan. But he's been up and down, and there's going to be nights where he's not great. He's a borderline 12-team league guy. I do like him under certain situations. But he's going to have nights where he has plays 31 minutes. There's going to be nights like tonight when he plays 18 minutes or 20 minutes, depending on what Van Gundy wants to do. Anthony Tolliver got really hot in this one. They went with the extra shooting and put him out there. There'll be nights when they want to run KCP, Stanley Johnson, and Marcus Morris more, and that's going to squeeze Ilyasova out. Not a must-own 12-team league guy, but could be a guy that does help if you're looking for some extra three-point shooting from the big man spot. But really, he's a borderline guy. On and off a roster really depends on the way that your team is currently structured. All right, let's have a look at the perfect DFS lineup from Saturday's action. Bring that up on the screen for you guys now if you're watching along. Well, that's the wrong one again. I keep pushing that wrong button. There we go. The perfect DFS lineup for Saturday. And I reckon, well, I know that at least one person that has tweeted me as a listener to the podcast smashed DraftKings on Saturday, put up massive numbers. I think he finished third in a $35,000 contest, so he would have taken home a pretty nice bundle of cash there, with so many of the guys that we talked about yesterday went off. Darren Williams put up 42.9. That was not one that was necessarily predicted, because going up against Memphis, you got the overtime bump there. He'd been pretty bad against the Spurs, but he's always a decent guy to look at given his low salary. Russ Westbrook, 51.6. You're guaranteed 50 points from him at the moment. He is just putting up crazy, crazy numbers. You had a choice between Westbrook and Steph. Westbrook was the one I went for. Steph wasn't too bad, but Westbrook is just at a completely different level at the moment. The shooting guards, Rod Hood, 32.3. That's two awesome games in a row from him. He is a guy that maybe there's a bit of a concern with Alec Burks coming back. I think he is a far superior player to Burks. If I'm in a standard league, he absolutely has to be owned. There is no question about that. Maybe something happens when Burks comes back. Maybe. But he's that good that I'm not concerned about it. He is going to be the steal of that draft. He was picked, I think, pick 22 or pick 23 last year. He is going to be, if they did a redraft, he'd be easily a top five player from that draft. Or maybe not top, maybe top seven. But regardless, it's still a steal. I'd have to go back and redraft it. He's going to be a steal from that draft. I really love me some Rod. The other shooting guard, Etuan Moore. We said the last time that the Bulls played a full game without Jim Butler, Moore was able to put up big numbers. He did it again. This wasn't quite as huge as the last time, but 30 points, 29.9. Really nice outcome. Butler's going to, now we'll talk about Jimmy Butler a little bit later. He's going to be out at least until the All-Star break. Seems to have escaped major damage, which is good news, with them labeling as a strain rather than a sprain. So a sprain is ligament tearing. A strain is more muscular. A little bit different, not quite as severe. So that's obviously great for Bulls fans, basketball fans, Jimmy Butler owners, anyone really who likes Jimmy Butler, who likes basketball. Anyway, regardless, Etuan Moore, until the All-Star break's over, he's going to have some significant playing time. It's not going to be great because Mike Dunleavy returned today, but you can keep using him in DFS for the time being as a nice tournament option. At small forwards, we had some massive scores here. KD, 65.3. He was a great option. And Nick Batum, 50.7. He's looked awesome in the last two games. Remember about a week or so ago that I was talking about, someone was tweeting at me about, I want to drop Nick Batum. I think it's now again, I'm not trying to call this person. I'm not going to mention who it was. I'm not trying to call them out, call you out. But this is why you don't overreact to a couple of slumps. Nick Batum is a top 50 player. Nick Batum is an awesome player. I love Nick Batum. Maybe I'm biased. I really, really like Nick Batum. And he is back absolutely firing. If I was in your league and you dropped Nick Batum, I would be all over that ad so quickly that you wouldn't even, yeah. If I had $100 in my fab budget and you dropped Nick Batum, we're in an auction free agent system, I'd put $90 on him. No doubt. He is that good. And that's why you have to be really careful about rash decisions from a guy who's been good and then has like a 2-week slump. It's just really important that you're able to differentiate between, I know we're talking DFS here, but you've got to be able to differentiate between DFS and seasonal. Go, well, it's a small slump and let's ride it out because we're going to get some big numbers coming forward. And that's exactly what Batum did. He was in a pretty nice matchup there as well. The power forwards, Markieff Morris, 42.4. He's always been, well, not always, recently, the matchups, the prices have worked well for him. So he's been a pretty solid DFS staple. Julius Randle, a real surprising one. The minutes were there for him. And I didn't hate it, but going against the Spurs is always a concern. The thing is that the Spurs' defensive ranking versus for fantasy in terms of against big men with Tim Duncan out is a lot better than what it is when Duncan's playing. So that played into Randle's favor here. He was able to put up a big number. He did have to have an issue with his ankle. Had some x-rays. They came back negative. Looks like he is in the clear. So that's obviously awesome news for Lakers fans, Randle fans, and his fantasy owners. And at center, Gorgui Dieng, 51.1. Who knew that you could play Gorgui Dieng and Karl-Anthony Towns together? I'll tell you who knew. Everybody, apart from the Timberwolves coaching staff. Everybody. I don't know how many rants I went on about that at the start of the season, for about the first 2 months. Play them together, and look what happens when you play them together. Dieng is actually good. And again, another great situation of you don't overly panic. Now, Dieng was a little bit of a different situation because we were seeing 2 or 3 months of him just not playing minutes at all, like being restricted to 17 minutes while spuds like Adrian Payne saw the court, while we had Damian Ruggiez, who I like, while Tayshaun Prince was getting 27 minutes, while Kevin Garnett was playing 18 minutes, while Nikola Pekovic was playing out of position at the four and playing 15 minutes in that spot. Sam Mitchell, play your best players. Dieng can play the four, Towns could step out and play the four for a little bit as well, although he's obviously a center. These guys work together. Absolutely shocking that they could play together. Really, really a massive, massive surprise that Gorgie Jen could play next to Carl Anthony Towns. Said no one ever. That lineup would have given you 408.6 points. So if you happen to have that lineup, congratulations. You were obviously very, very awesome at Daily Fantasy Sports. All right. Before we get into these box scores and have a look at them in a little bit more detail, we're going to take a quick break just for a word from one of our sponsors. All right, we are back in business. Let's look at these games. There are 10 of them, or there were 10 of them. The first one, the early game, Portland at Houston. CJ McCollum, pretty nice night from him. 40 minutes, 16 and 7, 2 triples, 2 assists, 4 steals and 1 block. And I probably undersold that. That's not just a pretty nice game. That's a really, really good performance from McCollum. He's definitely exceeded my expectations this year. Cooled off slightly in January, but yeah, back to putting up some big numbers. And Dame Lillard went 21, 4 and 10 with 3 triples and a steal. Not the greatest shooting night, but if you didn't expect that from Lillard when you drafted him, well, you just weren't paying much attention. What are we doing with Gerald Henderson here? 27 minutes from Henderson, 16, 4, and 1, 2 steals, a block, and a 3. That looks good. Now, I know that someone tweeted at me that Gerald Henderson is being showcased for a trade. You know my thoughts on that. If you don't know who Gerald Henderson is, why are you an NBA GM? Why do we need to showcase him for a trade? I know who Gerald Henderson is, and if it's being bandied about that it's showcasing for a trade, then you know that it's false. Anyway, I don't want to get into that rant again. What do we do with Henderson in fantasy leagues? Because his numbers, when you go and look on Basketball Monster, you can look at his rankings, and they look impressive. You can see that over the past 2 weeks, Gerald Henderson's a top 50 player. And then you obviously have to question your own sanity when you see that, and you think, "What am I? Is this serious? Like, what the hell is going on?" Because it's Gerald Henderson. And the reason that his numbers are that high are based on his efficiency. He is shooting in those last 2 weeks, 51% on 8.5 attempts. He is shooting for the season 42. He shot last season 44, 43, 45, 46, 45. What I'm trying to get at, he's not a 51% shooter. That will go down. Out of the categories that he's giving us a positive contribution in, he's giving it to us in steals in that time, 1.2 steals, which again is well above what he normally does. He's at 0.3 on the season. He was 0.6 last year, 0.7 the year before. He's at 1.2. That'll come down. He's also shooting 92% from the free throw line. He's at 75% on the season. So we're talking about a 17% increase on his seasonal numbers to what he's doing now. So the bulk of his value, and it's putting him into the top 50, is an inflated field goal percentage, and it's an inflated free throw percentage. I don't believe it. Because it's not real. And this is not something that I think that Henderson is going to do. Hey, by all means, add him if you've got a streaming spot, and let's see what happens. Let's see what they keep doing. They might keep giving him 24%. Maybe at age 28 or whatever Gerald Henderson is, he's all of a sudden become, just only though, at the end of January, start of February, a 50% shooter. I don't believe that that's going to be the case from him. He's not a terrible player to watch because he is super athletic and he does have some pretty nice dunks. But for fantasy, he just doesn't produce anything. He's also increased his three-pointers as well over this time frame. And again, that's not something that he really knows how to do. So don't get overly excited about Gerald Henderson. Add him if there's someone on your bench who's not worth anything. But don't go and drop Nick Batum. I wouldn't be dropping Robert Covington for him despite his struggles. I don't buy this. He's ranked 285th on the season. 44 now. Big jump. The minutes have spiked. It's an extra 6 minutes a game. But it's all inflated by this completely uncommon, that's a better word, field goal percentage. Mason Plumlee, still can't get enough minutes really happening here, but not a bad performance. 10 and 8 in 24 minutes with a steal and 2 blocks. A pretty decent performance. And Mo Harkless, he bucked the trend of having our power forward start 16 minutes. He played 30 minutes, went 14 and 6 with 2 steals, a block, and 2 threes. I like Mo Harkless more than a lot of people. I wish that he could get this sort of role moving forward because I know that he can produce for fantasy. He can be a 1.5 steals, 1.5 3 sort of guy with 12 points, 5 rebounds, and half a block, that sort of guy. He can be that guy. I don't think that he's going to be able to retain 30 minutes, but the guy that he replaced in the rotation is Noah Vonleh. He is a lot better than Noah Vonleh. I don't rate Noah Vonleh really at all. He also got extra run in this one because Alan Crabb was out, so that that worries me a little bit in that sense, that I just don't think that there's anything to get too excited about with Harkless here. When Vonleh comes back, when Crabb comes back, Harkless is going to be the guy that loses minutes. Henderson will lose a couple of minutes as well, but that is what is likely going to happen. Myles Leonard can't get anything happening. High hopes for him. It's just not happening at the moment. He really can't be owned in 12-team leagues. And Ed Davis, 3-9 in his 22 minutes. Nothing all that exciting there. Well, Al-Farouq Aminu had a very Al-Farouq Aminu sort of night. 11-7, which is good, but three triples, three steals, and a block. That's really where he's at. 4-13 from the field is not ideal, and missing both of his free throws, but he's obviously a standard league sort of guy. Onto the Rockets, Jim Harden. A big night from him. He was close to the monstrous line of the night. 33-8-3, four triples, three steals, one block, 10 turnovers, 7 of 18 from the field, and 15 of 18 from the free throw line. Just continues to get it done. And we saw a big Dwight game, which we haven't seen for about 2 or 3 weeks now. 41 minutes for Dwight, 17-14, 4 steals, and 6 of 10 shooting, and the customary 5 of 8 from the free throw line. You might look at that and go, that's not too bad from Dwight, going 63%, but he's normally that 55 to 62% sort of guy. The problem is that once you're below average, when your attempts go up, that's what really kills you for free throws. So you can look at that and go, okay, 63 is fine. It's better than the 38 or 39, whatever the Drummond's shooting. But on 8 attempts, you still can't recover from it. So don't get too looking like, oh, Howard's shooting 63. That's fine, but it's still the too many attempts for it to be recoverable from. Trevor Ariza, just 2 of 8 from the field. 5 points, 5 rebounds, but 4 steals and a 3. That's really where his value comes from. Some nice rebounding, but big steals and big 3s. There was no Terrence Jones, who's now out until after the All-Star break, after suffering a concussion in a car accident. This guy is legit. Like, I can't remember, what's the name of the guy on Twitter? NBA Injury Report? I think that's who it is. You probably all follow him, who puts up the injury analysis for players and makes up an injury. Like, yeah, Al-Farouq Aminu out, you know, cut nose while plucking hair or something like that. Terrence Jones' injuries are actually real. They're more weirder than what that NBA injury report guy makes up. That's where we're at with him. He shouldn't be owned in any 12-team leagues. None. I don't care if it's a keeper league. I don't care if it's a dynasty league. I don't care if you believe in Terrence Jones turning it around. He's just really not a good player. And if someone's not a good player, they get found out eventually. He has been found out this season. Even with Jones out, Josh Smith only played 9 minutes. 2 rebounds, no other stats. But still in 9 minutes, he managed to kill your field goal percentage. He went 0-4. Very Josh Smith-ish. He had some big opportunities the last couple of games. Not producing. I don't think that he's really worth worrying about too much in a 12-team league. It has to be really specific to own him anyway. And he's not even doing those sort of things on a regular basis. Clint Capella did not take a shot, but had 2 blocks and 6 rebounds. He fits really specific roles, so you've got to have a look at where you fit there. And Corey Brewer couldn't maintain the big performance from the last game. He went 3 of 11 for 8 points, but did have 5 assists in 28 minutes, and he's a guy that I don't really think we need to pay too much attention to in our standard formats. The next game, the Detroit Pistons and the Indiana Pacers. If you don't own Stanley Johnson, I'm sure someone else in your league already does. If he's floating on a waiver wire, you please do something about it. 38 minutes for Stan here, 14-10, 3 assists, 1 steal, 6 of 13. Van Gundy loves this guy. Plenty of people love this guy. I know Kyle McEwen, who you all know Kyle McEwen. He's a massive Pistons fan. Some of the DMs that he sends me regarding Stan, they border on lewd. They're very, it's like erotic fiction coming from Kyle, the amount of love that he has for this guy and how high he thinks he can go. He needs to be owned in absolutely every league. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope will come back, obviously, and he will take his starting role, but Johnson was getting a relatively consistent 30 minutes a night even before KCP went down. Has to be owned. Anthony Tolliver, I touched on him earlier. He hit 5 triples for 17 points, added 3 steals and 4 rebounds. He'll do this occasionally, but he really only has appeal in the deeper sort of formats. Nothing really for standard leagues. And Reggie Jackson, a nice game. 26 points, not a lot else. 3 rebounds, 2 assists, and 3 triples. But you love the fact that he went 10 of 15 from the field. Marcus Morris was also good, 16-2-4, and Andre Drummond went 10-13, a steal and 2 blocks. And once again, I'll reiterate, you do not care that he went 2 of 8 from the free throw line. You don't care, because if you own Andre Drummond, you are punting free throws, and you can't tell me that you're not. So he could go 1 of 300. It doesn't matter. Brandon Jennings played 16 minutes for 4 points and 3 assists. He very much falls into the Terrence Jones basket for me. He doesn't need to be owned in any 12-team leagues. I like Brandon Jennings a lot. It is just not happening from him this season. You do not recover from an Achilles injury and be a useful NBA player in that same season. Look at Wes Matthews. Oh, he was great. Yeah, he's come back early. What an iron man. He's really bad. He's not actually good, and he's probably hurting more fantasy teams at the moment than he's actually helping. Jennings is not the same recovery, relied more on his quickness, and it's just not happening for him. He's a clear backup. He's not playing extra minutes at the two, even with KCP out. He can be done. He saw 16 minutes here. Darren Hilliard, a second-round draft choice from Villanova, played 21 for 9 points with a couple of threes. Side note, I actually like Hilliard quite a bit. I think he can be a really decent rotation player. I like him a lot more than, say, Reggie Bullock or CJ Wilcox on the Clippers. I think that Hilliard can be a rotation-level player in the NBA. On to the Pacers. Yan Mahinmi was back. He only played 20 minutes, easing back from that back problem, and that allowed Jordan Hill to get big run. He played 27 off the bench, 12-8 with 3 assists and 4 steals. That's a nice Jordan Hill night, but how can you guess? The game before, he did absolutely nothing, while Lavoie Allen got all the spoils. Yeah, Mahinmi's role will increase. It's not going to go probably to 32 minutes or anything like that, but he'll go to 25 or 26, and it'll be him and Miles Turner that are going to run the majority of that front court, with Hill likely at low 20s, 17 to 22 sort of range, and Allen in a similar range. Great for Jordan Hill. Great if you forgot to drop him after Mahinmi returned and you still owned him. I don't think it's going to happen too often. What is going to happen often, though, is Miles Turner being really good. 32 minutes for Turner, 16 and 4, 3 assists, 1 block, on 8 of 13 shooting. That's not even his final form. He's got a lot of ways to go from here. He can start hitting threes. He can get his free throw percentage up. He can grab a lot more rebounds. He is going to be a real barnstorming second half guy, I think, this year. Paulie George, a fantastic night for him. 30 and 8 with 2 triples, 3 assists, 1 steal, and really efficient as well. 7 of 13 from the field. But you really love his 14 of 15 from the line. That sort of performance is massive because it gives you such a boost, especially heading towards the end of a weekly matchup. That can be one that, you know, influences your percentage category by a percent. And that sounds really small, but over the course of 6 days, having one guy in one game influence your overall score by a percent and a half is massive. To get that sort of change is huge towards the end of the week. Monte Ellis, 8, 6, and 5, a steal and a block. Yeah, not bad. And George Hill had 17, 4, and 2. Again, not bad performances from these guys. CJ Miles, he went massive during the week. He's not going to get a big role, though. They're really, you know, content with playing these two bigs up front because they've got a lot of bigs now who are decent. Lavoie Allen, Jordan Hill, Yan Mahinmi, Miles Turner. They're four guys who are all rotational pieces. Miles has been struggling. They're playing Paul George back at the three. It tends to make a bit more sense, especially when you can space the floor a little bit with Turner. He's not the three-point threat that what George is, or that what Miles is, but to space the floor, you don't need to be a guy who goes out there and just bombs away from three. You just need to be a guy who has the threat of, if he's out there, he can shoot it, or he doesn't need to be within 5 feet like Jahlil Okafor to score. That he can actually, you know, if he's open at the top of the key, at the elbow, inside the three-point line, 2 steps, that if it's open, he can knock it down where they don't have to sag off completely. That spacing as well, it's not just a guy who's going to take 6 3-point attempts a game. There's different sort of, you know, definitions of it, but it's not just someone who is Ryan Anderson. That is not the only way you can space the floor. It's guys who can take the occasional three, hit the occasional three, but hit jumpers around the court as well, just so that defenders don't have to sag off them, or, you know, just leave them alone. Like you see when guys like Andrew Bogut get the ball, or Joakim Noah get the ball, or Dwight Howard get the ball at the top of the key. Defenders just go, come on, mate. We both know you're not shooting. Let's just do something about this. Joe Young had 8 points with 2 triples in 13 minutes. I really like Joe Young a lot, but he's probably not going to contribute a huge amount this season. He's a, you know, deep dynasty sort of prospect. That's where he sort of lies. The Washington Wizards and the Charlotte Hornets we look at next. Big win for the Hornets. Otto Porter, bad game, good game, bad game, good game. Today was good game. 20 and 8, 2 triples, 4 steals, 1 block, 39 minutes. After he played 25 yesterday, maybe they were saving him because it was a back-to-back, and he's still dealing with that hip problem. He obviously has to be owned. He's been a really important player this season and someone who has dealt with lots of injuries, but is putting up really nice numbers when he gets on the court. Brad Beal moved to a bench role, which I don't really understand why he'd go and start one game and then move to the bench the next game. Yes, they limited his minutes and he only played 20, but just keep him in the starting lineup. regardless. 22 points for Beal, 3 triples, 2 rebounds, 3 assists on red hot shooting. And Johnny Wall followed up his big performance against the Warriors the other night and then his triple-double yesterday. 23, 6, and 10, 2 triples and 2 steals. And his 3-pointers is an extra string to his bow, something that if you drafted him, that's not what you're anticipating from Wall, and he's giving it to you at a much improved rate. Marcin Gortat, another 35 minutes. Hallelujah. I can't say enough about that. 11 and 13 for Gortat, 2 assists and a block. A really nice night there. There was no Nene. Shocking. I know, that's a massive surprise that Nene wasn't able to come back in one game. Jared Dudley started. He only played 26 minutes. 10 points, 2 triples, 2 steals and a block, but that is still a really useful line. He does deserve consideration for 12-team leagues. He's not a guy like a Gerald Henderson who's having this out of control, you know, shooting run over the last 2 weeks. He's been consistently at that back end level and is a 3-point shooter who gives it from the small forward spot. Maybe we get power forward eligibility. He should have got it already, but he hasn't. But he does it with high field goal percentage, which is something that is a little bit, it's rare. You don't get guys who are 50% shooters who then can hit 1.5 to 1.7 threes a game. And that's sort of where Dudley, what he can do. Garrett Temple started in place of Bradley Beal. 25 minutes, 2 points, 3 rebounds. We don't want anything to do with him, even if he was getting 30 minutes a night. There's the occasional game that he has, but he's really just not good. On to the Hornets, Nick Batum. What a massive game. 44 minutes for Batum. 26, 11, and 9. That's not where it ended, though. 3 triples, 1 steal, 1 block. He went 9 of 20 from the field, and he hit 5 of his 6 free throws. I am a massive Nick Batum fan, as you've probably heard. And he was crazy good. Again, his last week, look, he did struggle, and there's no doubt about that. The toe issue was a concern, and his shooting had dropped off. But his last 3 games, he's giving us 19, 7.5, 7, 2.7 triples, 1.7 blocks on 48 and 92. They're obviously fantastic numbers, like awesome numbers. That's not going to be the norm, but you've got a top 60 guy with top 40 potential on your hands if you own him. Definitely a real stretch that bothered him with that toe. But when he gets an injury, it does affect him. We saw it last year that people were writing him off and there was so much Nick Batum abuse thrown around last season. This guy's a bum. He's useless. He's terrible. What is this guy? There was heaps of that going around. Probably all said in that sort of an accent as well. But when he gets an injury, it throws everything off. When he's humming, forget about it. He is a guy that I thought probably should have been an all-star in the East, but I'm not a fan. Well, I am a fan, but I've only got one fan vote. I wouldn't put Dwayne Wade in. I would have much rather have Nick Batum in over Dwayne Wade. I think that he's had a really, really good season. He is so key to this team who was so good early on, and they dropped off when he started having this injury. He is a massive key to what the Hornets do. Kemba Walker was good as well, 23, 5, and 5 with 4 triples and a steal. And Cody Zeller, this is a very Cody Zeller line than what we saw before his shoulder issue when he was a legit top 50 player. I know that might sound dumb, but he was. 8 and 9, 3 steals, 50%, and hit all of his free throws. One turnover. You can't ask for much more than that. I see a lot of questions, posts on Reddit, on Twitter, asking about, should I go and stash Al Jefferson? I do own Al Jefferson in my the Red Rock Listener League, the Stacey Augman division. He sits in my IR spot. That's where he sits. I don't reckon I'll be in any rush to activate him. I just don't think that he's going to be. I don't think he's taking the starting job back off Zeller. When he first came back from his illicit substance suspension, he didn't take the starting job back off Zeller. Zeller was starting. Jefferson looked horrible. And he was only playing like 17 to 20 minutes a game. I think that's going to be the case. He's going to bump Spencer Hawes from the rotation, but he's not going to take it away from Zeller. Jefferson is done in Charlotte. He's not going to be playing there next season. I am almost sure. He feels like he is completely washed up at the moment. Zeller, look, he might go from 30 minutes down to 28 minutes, but I still think that they really want to develop him as the center, and they like what they get from him. He's very underrated. He is a better defender than what Jefferson is. He's a better rim protector than what Jefferson is. And his fantasy numbers, honestly, they're probably better than what Jefferson's been giving us this season as well. I reckon Jefferson's had one good game this year. Zeller, he just has underrated performances that don't really pop. But when you look at the average of it all, he looks nice. Marvin Williams, I don't understand how this guy is doing it. 13 and 10 with 2 triples in 29 minutes. 5 of 6 shooting obviously helps. He has to be owned. And Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, not the greatest night. 9 points, no rebounds. That's where his value comes from. Above average rebounding from a small forward. Didn't happen there. 2 assists and a steal. Yeah, probably still want to own him in 12 team leagues, but by no means is he a lock. He's an active player. He's a top 10 guy on your team. When I say active, you've normally got 10 active spots and 3 bench spots. I don't think that he automatically locks into one of those 10 active spots on your team. We saw Jeremy Lin go down to 16 minutes yesterday. He's gone back to 23 here. That's probably where he sits, and that's what I was mentioning yesterday. Don't think that 16 is going to be where he settles. They had PJ Hairston completely out of the rotation, and they clearly just do not like PJ Hairston. Lin will settle at this 23-minute mark. It's not really enough for him to have standard league value, 7 points and an assist. If there's someone else out there that you want in a 12-team league, Lin can probably be moved on from, but he's not going to get back to 28 minutes a game, but he's also not going to sit at 16. The Brooklyn Nets and the Philadelphia 76ers. Thad Young with another game. He had a real slump in January, picking it back up now. 22-10 with a steal and a block in 39 minutes. And Brooke Lopez went 17-5 with a block. So good numbers from their two big men. If you have any idea what the Nets are doing at point guard, please send me a letter. Type it out. Put it in an envelope. Self-stamped, self-addressed envelope. I'll write back to you. I'll handwrite it back to you. Because I cannot work out what they do. Shane Larkin goes and has a big game and drops 14 assists. And then the next two games, you know what we'll do? We'll play Donald Sloan 32 minutes in each of those games. And then Sloan plays 32 minutes in each of those games and puts up 15 points and nails 4 threes. So then what we'll do in the next game? Now let's give it back to Larkin and play him 26 minutes. It's like, when you have a good game, you're going to get reduced. I can't understand it. I still think that Larkin is the better player out of the two. It doesn't mean much, though, if they're going to go from 27 minutes to 18 minutes, from 30 down to 20. They're going to be all over the place, and they're low-end anyway. You can stream them in when the Nets play and hope you pick the right one on the right day out of Larkin and Sloan, but your guess is going to be as good as mine. I think overall, if we look at it, yeah, Sloan is probably playing more minutes than what Larkin is, but still, owning them is an exercise in complete frustration. We had a breakout from Markel Brown. He played 20 minutes, had 15 points on 5 of 5 shooting, including 3 triples, 3 assists, and 1 steal. That's great, but it's seriously not happening again. Do not get overly excited. Don't even get overly excited. Do not get excited, full stop, about Markel Brown. It is just not going to be something that happens. Wayne Ellington, 24 minutes for 11 points. He's a punt field goal percentage guy who has real low-end value for probably 14-team leagues. Bojan Bogdanovic, shockingly enough, couldn't hit 7 triples again. He had 9 points. And another shock as well, Joe Johnson couldn't put up a massive performance like he did against the Kings. I thought he'd be in for a chance for a pretty big night. 9 points, 3 assists for Johnson in 29 minutes. Still has to be owned. Again, struggled, but still gave you 3 assists. And the assists that he's giving you out of that shooting guard spot and even small forward eligibility can be really useful. You don't get his sort of assists normally. Thomas Robinson had a steal and 2 blocks in 14 minutes, and that's great for him. On to the Philadelphia 76ers, Nerlens Noel. 32 minutes for Noel. He did suffer an ankle injury. He came back, so that's awesome. 18-4, 2 assists, 4 steals, 3 blocks. That is as much of a Noel special as we've seen. 7 of the combined steals and blocks. Again, I reckon if I told you what Nerlens Noel's ranking is, you would be shocked. I'll tell you now, he is a top 20 player over the last 2 weeks. He is ranked 17th over the last month. He's ranked 22nd over the last 2 months. All that while averaging 11 points a game. That's because he's a 2 steals, he's a 2 blocks guy, he's an 8 rebounds guy, and he is shooting 62% from the field over the last 2 months. 62%. He started off the season at about 45. He started off last year at about 38 and took it up to 46 at the end. He is finding his role. They're moving Jahlil Okafor out to the 4 now. I am convinced that Noel is the better prospect than Okafor, and if they're trading one of them, it's going to be Okafor that goes. They can run Noel from the center position. His offense isn't quite as good, but I think that he fits better with everything, and defensively he is able to do so much. He is a very, very unique talent defensively, playing passing lanes, blocking shots, protecting the rim. He actually can jump. He can actually read the play. Okafor, not quite so much. Obviously a much better offensive game from Okafor. But Noel is absolutely killing it at the moment. So if you made that investment at the start of the season, a top 40 pick, a top 4 round pick maybe, you're pretty happy that it's starting to pay off. Well, it's not starting to pay off. It is paying off, and it's paying off big time. You have got yourself a top 25 guy basically over the last 2 months. So kudos to you. Jahlil Okafor was still really good, though, in this game. Look, nothing to take away from him. 22-17, 1 steal and 3 blocks in 33 minutes. We haven't sort of really seen that sort of performance from him for ages, it feels like. It's probably back in November was the last time we saw it. Now, he is a guy that is going to have restrictions. He's not a great shot blocker. He's averaging 1.1 a game, which is above my expectations. He's not going to get steals. He's not going to pass. He's not going to hit threes, none of that sort of stuff. But I think the thing that's probably a little bit surprising with him is his 49% field goal percentage. We would have thought, you know, 55 would be a good aim for him. And he is at 53 over the last 2 months, 57 over the last month. That will increase. And he's going to be, he's a free throw liability. He's not quite as bad as I anticipated, but at 68%, he's taking 3.7 attempts. That goes to 6 or 7 attempts, then you're in a big hole. Right now, it's recoverable from, but there is still a concern with him. He has improved it, though, so that's obviously something that once you work, if you work on it, I give you a lot of credit. Still should be owned, but nowhere near the sort of player Okafor is, and some people might look at that and go, well, one guy's averaging 10 points, one guy's averaging 17. It really, that's not how it works. And I'm sure all you guys listening to this podcast know that that's not how it works. So Okafor, big night from him. Probably the biggest night he's had in quite a while. But, you know, a solid player. He's averaging 17 and 7 on the season. That's not bad. It's not awesome, but it's not bad. And 1.1 blocks a game. Yeah, really just solid. Just that sort of back end guy at the moment. Ish Smith was out in this one. TJ McConnell got the start and put up big numbers. 17 points, 6 assists, 2 threes, 2 steals. Hit 7 of his 10 shots. That's great. Smith looks like he's going to be back Monday. So McConnell goes back to playing in that backup role where he gets about 17 minutes a night. And you know what? Even in 17 minutes a night, McConnell's not someone to be completely ignored because he gets you 4 assists a game. Now, he doesn't do much else. Half a 3, 1.7 steals is nice. 4 assists is nice. He's shooting 58% over the last 2 weeks. He's shooting 48% on the season. These are all okay numbers. In his last 2 weeks, he's ranked 122nd. So 12-teamers can definitely stream him in. 14-team leagues, he basically has to be owned, even in that backup role. And obviously, when he gets a bigger starting job, you know, he does pretty well. And that's exactly what happened here. Jeremy Grant had a 1-1, 9-7 in 24 minutes. Yeah, so whatever. He's more of a deeper league guy unless someone goes down out of the Noel Okafor front court. And Bob Cove, at least he got 26 minutes, but not great. 2 of 8 shooting, but I'm still okay with 9 points, 2 triples, 8 rebounds, 1 assist, and 2 steals. 9 points doesn't look good. The 26 minutes don't look good, but 8 rebounds, 2 threes, and 2 steals, they're all above average numbers, and they're all really, really good numbers. So he should someone, obviously he still has to be, well not obviously, it's not obvious to some people because people do drop him. I think that he still has to be held in basically all leagues. Hollis Thompson played 29 minutes and had 14 points with 2 triples, and Nick Stauskas was terrible. 4 points in 20 minutes with an assist, and Isaiah Cannon hit 2 triples for 6 points in his 24 minutes. Bit of a disappointing night for Cannon. I thought with Smith out, he might see a bit of extra run and had a real chance to put up a big night against let's be honest, a terrible Nets team. The New Orleans Pelicans and the Cleveland Cavaliers. My boy, Norris Cole. 34 minutes for Cole. 26, 2-5, 2 triples and 1 steal. At this point, you can't predict when he's going to play well. This is a career high for Cole. Maybe he got the, I'm having my jersey retired by Cleveland State bump. That probably won't happen again for him in his career. Don't imagine Cleveland State will retire his jersey twice. What do you make of it? He has to be owned. As bad as I think that he has to be owned because the minutes are still being force-fed to him. He's still playing ludicrously more minutes than Jrue Holiday. Explain that to me. Oh, no, nobody can. I know Holiday has injury issues, but regardless, he should be getting 30 minutes. Cole, a decent night. There's going to be stinkers along the way without any doubt because that's just who he is, but a pretty nice performance from him here. Omer Asik almost looks like an NBA player at the moment. 29 minutes, 6 points, 12 rebounds and 2 assists. Just stream him if you want boards. That's really all I can say with him. Anthony Davis, 24 and 11 with 2 blocks. Nice 11 of 20 shooting. That's just an average sort of line from him. You'd love more of those peripheral numbers. And Dante Cunningham replaced Alonzo G in the starting lineup. But in the end, we don't care because they do nothing. 31 minutes for Cunningham. 6 points, 2 triples, 2 assists, 1 steal. That's fine. If you're in an 18-team league, a 20-team league, that's about where his value stops, I reckon. Jrue Holiday, 5 of 18 is not ideal. 12, 5 and 4, a triple, 2 steals, pretty decent numbers. Well, Ryan Anderson really stunk. 2 of 11 off of 6 points, 4 rebounds and 2 assists, but that's what you get from him. Some nights you'll get really hot, Some nights he'll be really cold. Bryce DeJean-Jones started, played 20 minutes, had 1 point. Not ideal after his massive outburst. I think it was on Thursday that they played last. He's still only a deeper league guy and a really a DFS punt option. On the Cavs, Kyrie Irving. You waited 2 months for him to come back, and he's giving it to you now. 29, 4, and 3, 2 steals, 3 triples, 11 of 21 shooting. He remains really good, and he actually is really underrated this season. LeBron, 27, 3, and 8 with 2 triples and a steal. Big night from LeBron, and J.R. Smith got red hot as well. 24 and 3, 6 triples, 1 steal. By red hot, he also took 16 three-pointers, so maybe not that red hot, but in terms of his overall output, you're pretty happy. But 6 of 16 from three-point land is still 38% conversion, so it's not horrible, but 16 is a very big amount of three-point attempts. Kevin Love was out of this one. Matthew Dellavedova was out as well, so they started Timofey Mozgov next to Tristan Thompson. Thompson scored 0 points but grabbed 15 rebounds. I would have expected him to score at least 1 point, but he didn't. He's really truly a rebounding specialist, and Mozgov went 6-6 with a couple of blocks. He can be left for deeper leagues. We also saw 27 minutes for Andy Varejao. 2 points, 10 boards, 2 steals, and 2 blocks. You might as well frame that because that's probably not going to happen again for him, most likely in his career. Iman Shumpert went back to the 23 minutes here, 5-4 with a couple of blocks. He really only can be used in the really deepest of deep formats. The Dallas Mavericks and the Memphis Grizzlies said this was an overtime game. Chandler Parsons has been having a pretty sort of down week or so, but a big night here. 26, 8-4, 5 triples and a steal in 41 minutes. And Darren Williams was big too. 22 points, 11 dimes, 2 threes, 1 steal. Really like that sort of performance from him. Dirk had 18-7. That's great. Zaza, just not getting back into it in the last couple of games. 31 minutes for Zaza, 4-6 with a couple of steals. Sort of has dropped off, but I still think he has to be owned. Wes Matthews doesn't. I don't think that Wes Matthews is a must own. If you're in a 10-team league or shallower, I am almost convinced, I'm almost 100% sure that you could find someone better on the waiver wire than Wes Matthews. He's ranked outside the top 180 over the last month. He's ranked outside the top 100 in the season. What's he giving you? He's giving you some threes. 2.3 on the season, that's great, but the last month at 1.6, you know, suboptimal rebounding, scoring, assists, steals, blocks, field goal percentage, and right on average free throws at the moment. Like on the season, 84, but recently 78. Just really struggling. He does have probably more upside than who you might find on your waiver wire, but he's just not producing, and he hasn't been producing for a while. Started off red hot. Well, no, he didn't. He started off better than anticipated, got hot for a little stretch, and has slowed down now. So, yeah, in a 10 or shallower, I'm not sure that Matthews has to be continued to be owned. And in a 12-team league, I'd be seriously considering it as well. Justin Anderson really playing himself into a bigger role here. 13 minutes, 6-4 with a triple. Only a deep league sort of player at this point, a 20-team league sort of guy. Maybe you want to get saucy and try him in a, say, 16-team league and see where it goes. But I don't really see him, barring injury, being able to get 18 to 20 minutes moving forward. JJ Barea had 3 dimes in his 17 minutes, and Charlie Villanueva saw the court for 1 second. Congrats, Charlie. Ray Felton played 32 with Devin Harris out. 16-7, Felton, 3 triples and a steal. He pops up with the occasional big game, but it's not enough for us to go, yeah, let's go and add Ray Felton because he's going to do this 1 in every 5 games. He's been a lot better than anyone could have anticipated this season, but really not for standard league players. On the Grizzlies, Marc Gasol, 22-6 with a block. A nice night from him. Mike Conley, let's check his assist to turnovers. Yep, still pretty good. 16-4-7, had 2 turnovers there with 2 triples. A nice night. And Zach Randolph, 36 minutes, 20-14 with a steal. That is a vintage throwback Zach Randolph game. It just doesn't happen often enough, though. He is very up and down. We're hearing talk. After I mentioned the other day about not hearing anything, and I swear to God, I've heard nothing on Brandon Knight for about 4 months. Since he went out and he was day-to-day and then it's just never been seen from since. Apparently, he's due back after the All-Star break. So, that's obviously great news for Brandon Wright fans. But it might mean that we're going to see a little bit less of Randolph. Perhaps he's been playing a little bit of center. At the moment, Randolph is like the last guy on your bench in a 12-team league. He's okay, but his limitations in so many areas means that he needs to be 22-12 to be really valuable because he doesn't do anything in assists or threes or steals or blocks. He hasn't blocked a shot in the last 2 weeks. Yeah, his field goal percentage is up at the moment at 51, but he's a subpar free throw shooter as well. So he's not a must-own player by any stretch. Courtney Lee had a nice versatile line, 10-1-4, two triples, a steal, and a block, but he can be left alone in most standard formats. While Tony Allen started and played 17 minutes, we can leave him alone. What about Jeff Green? Hot shooting, red hot, on fire Jeff Green. 35 minutes is great, but this is Jeff Green at his best. 4 of 14 from the field for 9, 5, and 3 with a block. He'd been, you know, really good for 2 weeks. Probably still needs to be held, and then we'll see what happens. But there is almost zero doubt that he reverts to shithouse Jeff Green. The Chicago Bulls and the Minnesota Timberwolves. Jimmy Butler was out, as we mentioned. He might even play before the All-Star break, which would be ludicrous. Do not play a guy who's, you know, just escaped major knee injury one game before the All-Star break. I'd rather sit him out of the All-Star game and let him come back. You give him almost 2 weeks off. But the Bulls, their medical staff, they'll do the wrong thing, almost guaranteed. So we're probably going to see Butler play a game before the All-Star break is out. Obviously, you're happy if you're a Butler owner that no serious damage was done. Nikola Mirotic is also, they gave some more information about that hematoma. It looks like he's not going to have an extended timetable to return, which is great, so he'll likely be back after the break as well. Pau Gasol was back after a one-game absence, 25-8, one steal, two blocks, and two triples. So a big, big night from Pau. And Bobby Portis saw extended run here, 28 minutes, which is what we've been waiting for the whole time that Mirotic is out, 15-3 with a steal and a block on 7 of 9 shooting. I am not getting overly excited about Bobby Portis, about going and adding him back in a 12-team league or anything like that. Again, it's one example. Over about 2 weeks, I'd want to see it a couple more times before I really get, you know, too enthralled with adding him. Etuan Moore's a nice short-term guy, 38 minutes, 17, 2 and 7 with three triples. If Butler happens to miss any more time, he was playing, obviously, in place of Mirotic there and putting up some decent numbers. But with Mike Dunleavy back, who played 14 minutes here and had 5 points, you think it's going to be hard for Moore to get 37 minutes when Butler returns and then Dunleavy starts to get his role back. Tony Snell started and was very Tony Snell, 2 points and nothing else. He is just really bad. And Dougie McDermott, 8-3 in his 26 minutes. Derrick Rose took on a stack of usage with Butler out, which we thought he would do, 18-10-5. The shooting wasn't ideal, 6 of 20, but still you're happy with 10 assists, 18 points, 5 rebounds, pretty nice numbers. Clearly has to be earned, and Taj Gibson had a bit of a struggling night, 6-7-6, but a steal and a block is still okay from Taj, and we obviously have to keep owning him. On to the Timberwolves. Gorgui Dieng, I touched on him earlier. He was massive, 41 minutes, 24-13-7, one block on 10 of 13 shooting, hit all four of his free throw attempts. Where was this Gorgui Dieng for November, for December, for most of January? Where he was buried on the fourth page of Sam Mitchell's clipboard. That's called the common sense page. Let's play our best players and let's play guys who can actually play together. That's how far buried he was. I think eventually he's gotten to that page and he's saying, oh, there we go. Let's play Zach LaVine because he's actually maybe a part of the future and he's not a backup point guard. Let's try that. Oh, Gorgui Dieng, maybe he can play with Towns. Oh, shocking. Shocking. Instead of playing Nikola Pekovic with Karl Anthony Towns. If when Pekovic comes back, they start playing Pekovic over Dieng, people in Minnesota should storm the court and just escort Pek off and go, look, mate, you've been okay, but look, you come and sit up with us. I'll buy you a beer, have some popcorn, watch the game up here. Your legs will feel better. Your ankles will feel better. You're still going to get paid. Just don't take the minutes away from these other guys. Surely that'll never happen, but you know what I mean. Rick Rubio, 14-5-6 with 3 steals. A nice night from him. Helps when you go up against Derrick Rose and you can hit 4 of 6 of your shots. So a good night from Rubio. And Andy Wiggins, this is very Andy here. 21 points for Ando in 33 minutes. Wigo had 2 rebounds, 2 assists, and nothing else. This is always what is going to hold him back from being a top flight fantasy player. It may change, but it does not appear to be something that's changing in the near future. Zach LaVine got 36 minutes, and that's fantastic. 13 points, 3 assists, 2 steals, and a 3. The poor shooting was not good, 5 of 16, but he has to be owned in all leagues. One thing I'm not liking at the moment with the Timberwolves is Andre Miller playing over Tyus Jones, but whatever, that doesn't have much of an impact on anything. And the other good thing to come out of this game is Tayshaun Prince played 12 minutes. It's a start. It's down from 29. 12 minutes is a start. It needs to be about approximately 12 minutes and 19 seconds less than what he played today. There was still no Kevin Martin, no Kevin Garnett, no Nikola Pekovic, and Nemanja Bjelica was a DNP CD in this game. the Lakers and the Spurs. Wouldn't you know it, the Lakers kept the game close. They almost got over the top. The Spurs got back with a, or they got a victory by four in the end. Some big games from the Lakers players. Jordy Clarkson, 21-6-4 with a triple on some really nice shooting. Julius Randle went 15-17 in his 31 minutes, four assists and two steals. He obviously has to be owned. What about D'Angelo Russell? What did he do? Well, he played 23 minutes, didn't close the game out, had 12-2-2 with two threes and a steal. I do not understand what the Byron Scott situation is with him. Did Russell bang his misses? Why does he hate him? What is the story? Did anyone see the quote that came out from Scott today? Now, I don't have the exact quote in front of me. Probably should have done that. But it was something along the lines of, someone asked him, do you sit down and have a meeting with him to explain where he's gone wrong? And Byron Scott, I'm sure he was standing there, arms folded, looking gruff, because that's how you prove that you're a man. You have to scowl and you have to have your arms crossed and you have to be a smart ass, because that's exactly how you show that you're a man and you've got balls. Byron Scott said, no, I don't have meetings with him. He's too young to have a meeting with. Unless the Lakers meeting room has got like a velvet rope across the door and a bouncer, yeah, at the door going, mate, not in those shoes. See you later. Nah, not enough women. Why is he too young to get in? Show us your ID. That's fake. Surely, the younger players need more guidance. I'm not talking to you as our coach until you're 25. He's a character, isn't he? He is not a real person. These are not real things that Byron Scott says. How does Byron Scott have a job, but Tom Thibodeau doesn't, and David Blatt doesn't, and Mike D'Antoni doesn't? These things are not... Look, the Lakers want to lose, sure, but they're actually winning some more games, so good. They want to lose. They want to keep their pick. But why destroy the highest draft pick you've had in about 20 years by just saying dumb shit? When they go and talk to the kid, and he looks exasperated, goes, I don't know what I have to do because nobody talks to me. Welcome to 1975, Byron. What a wanker. Lou Williams played 37 minutes because we need to develop him. I'm sure he's old enough to get a meeting. 14-3-4 with two triples. And Kobe took a massive 28 shots. He hit 9 of them. 25 points, 4 triples and 4 assists is good, and a block, and you know that you've owned Kobe, you are punting field goals. That's a shitload of shots, though. At the moment, it's Kobe. Do whatever you want. We don't care. Do what you want. And to me, this is not a good way to run an organization. But what do I know? I'm sitting here at my table talking shit about them while they play in the NBA and coach in the NBA and run an organization. Anyway, Roy Hibbert played 8 minutes and sprained his ankle. That's probably the best positive contribution he's made to the team all year. 2 points and 2 rebounds in 8 minutes for Hibbert. And Tariq Black played 17 and went 4-8. At this point, I want to see Tariq Black get some starting center minutes. I want to see him play 25 minutes. He can be good. I reckon Tariq Black can be a decent player. I think that he's obviously got fouling issues. That happens for him quite a bit, but he's honing it in at the moment. I really like Tariq Black. So hopefully, and I don't want to say that. If Roy Hibbert happens to miss time, I hope that Tariq Black gets the nod and we get to see 25 minutes out of him and see what he can deliver, because he will be a guy that I reckon can get you 10 rebounds, can get you 10 points, and can get you 2 blocks, and that might be enough. 2 or 3 games, a nice stream in a 14-team league sort of format. Brandon Bass, remember when he was good at one stage? 4-4 for him with a steal and a block. That has obviously dropped off. Now, the Spurs had to play their better players more minutes because the game was close. So LaMarcus Aldridge went 26-9. Kawhi Leonard went 20-13 with 3 assists and a steal. So big nights from those guys. And Danny Green was actually really productive. 11-5, 3 triples, 1 steal and 2 blocks. And a lot of people will still look at that and go, 11 points, this guy's trash. But this is where his fantasy value comes in. 3 triples, 2 blocks and 1 steal is really good. He is quietly inside the top 90 over the last month. He is a top 50 player over the last 2 weeks because he is averaging 2.7 threes, 1.1 steals and 0.6 blocks. He is getting close to what he was doing last year. He only averaged 11 points a game last year. He is getting close to it. He should be owned in basically all 12-team leagues now. There's going to be bad nights, definitely, but at 28 minutes a game over the last 2 weeks, it's up. With Manu Ginobili out with a busted nut, he's probably going to have to play some extra minutes. Has to be owned if what he does is what you need. and he contributes in those low-volume categories, the 111 categories, quietly getting back on track. David West started in place of, who was it? Tim Duncan, that's the player. How did I forget him? 6-8 with 5 assists and 3 blocks for West. A solid night, but nothing for us to really be too invested in for standard leagues. And Patty Mills had 13 points in his 22 minutes, hit 3 triples and had 4 assists, but he's another guy that we leave alone for the deeper formats. The next game, the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Golden State Warriors. Talked about Kevin Durant, Russ Westbrook, 27 and 12, 2 triples, 3 rebounds, 3 steals, 9 of 9 from the line, 8 of 22 from the field. That's not ideal, but still another big performance from Westbrook. And Dion Waiters, has to be the leader in the clubhouse for doing the least with the most at the moment. 37 minutes, 4 and 4, 3 steals. Who is a player that's doing less with more at the moment? I want your ideas. Tweet me, redrock_bball. Waiters has to be the leader. It was Justice Winslow, but he's doing more. Who is doing less with more than what Waiters is doing? Steve Adams played 33 minutes, 12-8 with a steal and 2 blocks. He does come into consideration for 12-team leagues under the right circumstances. And what about Enes Kanter? 20 minutes, but 14 points, 15 rebounds in 20 minutes. That is ludicrous. 7 of 10 shooting. Missed his only free throw, which is not something that's normally an issue for him. Really, really nice performances from Kanter at the moment. He probably should be owned in 12-team leagues. The minutes aren't appealing, definitely, but the last 2 weeks, he's giving you 13.7 points, 9 boards, 0.6 blocks, but he's giving you 53% shooting on 10.7 attempts. That's impactful. 94% on 2 attempts. Super impactful. So he's a positive contributor in rebounds and in both percentages, and that can really help to boost those categories. By no means is he a must-own player. If he gets unleashed for 30 minutes at some stage, you know that it's going to be big numbers. We saw last year he was a legit top 30 player towards the end of last season. It's not going to be like that for him, but is he the best offensive rebounder in the game? He's pretty close. I think Andre Drummond's probably better, but he's pretty close to being the best offensive rebounder in the game. He's pretty close to being the worst offensive big man in the game as well, but he does provide a skill that not many others can do, and second chance points are huge in the league, and he's providing that for this team. So he is providing some pretty decent fantasy numbers too. Serge Ibaka, he is just horrible at the moment, really bad. 36 minutes for Ibaka, 8 points, 3 rebounds, and a 3-pointer. I don't think he has to be dropped in fantasy leagues. No chance that he needs to do that, but his numbers are way down. They will bounce back. The last month, he's only at 1.6 blocks. That's obviously a massive departure from a guy that 4 years ago was at 3.7. That's a huge drop-off. And he's probably going to settle into that guy who's a mid-round guy, a guy who's, you know, maybe your seventh best player on your team. But you don't drop your seventh best player just because you're pissed off because you drafted him in the third round. People will drop him because of that reason. You shouldn't. Just, you know, you got to readjust. This is the new him. And it's a pain in the ass. His form is definitely not good at the moment, but it's a great buy low opportunity because, as I said, understanding psychology, I didn't say it in this episode, but I've said it in the last couple, understanding the psychology of people is a big part of it. And it's understanding that who these people are that people get frustrated with. And people get frustrated with players who do things that aren't the norm. You're a power forward and you're getting 6.8 rebounds a game. You're soft. You're shit. What are you doing? Like, that's a common thought process. Oh, Ibaka, 4 rebounds. What's wrong with this guy? Why is he shooting 47%? He's my power forward. I've had it with this guy. Wasted a pick, ruined my season. He's dropped. Thanks. I'll take him for free. That's what you got to be look out for. There are certain players who just push people's buttons and push, you know, I don't want to say the uneducated, that the people who don't necessarily look at the big picture, there are people who push their buttons. And you need to be able to pounce on these sort of things. Go, don't drop him. Just send him my way. I'll send you Jeremy Lin. I'll send you the worst player on my bench. I'll send you Brandon Jennings if you're still holding on to him for whatever reason. I'll send you Bob Portis. Do you want him? He's an up-and-coming rookie with crazy eyes. Maybe he does something. You got to look at these people. There'll be people who own Serge Ibaka. Look, come on, mate. Let's get serious. I'm holding on to him. But I'm telling you, there's going to be people who are going to be like, I'm done with this guy. He's trash. He's garbage. Doesn't grab rebounds. Can't do anything anymore. He's useless. European or overseas players don't know what they're doing. It's going to happen. Be prepared to make that move. On the Warriors. Anyone else on the Thunder? I like what Campaign did. He had a triple one, not much else. And you know that I'm as big a Campaign fan as there is. For the Warriors, Steph Curry, 26, 6 and 10, a triple, 3 steals. Not his most efficient night, 10 of 25, but it's still pretty solid night there. Klay Thompson, 18 and 4 with not much else. And Harry Barnes had probably his best game since returning from the ankle problem, 19 and 4 with 3 triples. Not a lot else to really talk about. Yeah, look, you probably should own him in a 12-team league, but if he was on a waiver wire and I had a strong team, I wouldn't feel compelled to go and grab him. Draymond Green, not ideal. 9, 14 and 6. Subpar shooting as well, not his best outing, but the Warriors, they still got the victory. Andre Iguodala had a really nice night, 8-3-2, 2 steals and a block, so contributing all over the place. And Maurice Spates chimed in with 15 points in 17 minutes. But once again, there's nothing really actionable with these Warriors games. The Utah Jazz and the Phoenix Suns, Rudy Gobert, he got hacked a lot in this game, but made 9 of 12 free throws, so that's obviously good for him. And it's good to stop the hacking. 13 and 13, 1 steal, 4 blocks. He is our back, and he's getting close to the second half of last year numbers that we saw from him. Probably not going to live up to where he was drafted, but still putting up some big performances. Gordie Hayward, 22, 6 and 3, 1 3, 1 steal, 2 blocks. He can do it all. I love Gordie Hayward. And Rod Hood, who I talked about earlier, 25 and 4, 3 triples. Another big night from Rod. Derek Favors, not his best performance, 11 and 7, but you know what you're getting out of him. And what about Hal Neto? 37 minutes. I talked about him yesterday. His minutes are definitely trending the right way. Now, he played a stack more in this one because Trey Burke was out. 13, 2 and 4 is really nice, but I don't think that we really need to pay too much attention to him in a 12-team league. I reckon your league needs to go to 180 players to really be considering Neto. I might even look at it in a 14-team league because Trey Burke has been dreadful this season, and Neto has been playing much better than him and getting more minutes consistently, and maybe he's starting to take that leap. If you've been listening to the podcast the last couple of days, why isn't he hitting the rookie wall? He's getting better as the season progresses. What kind of sorcery is this? Where's the rookie wall? I know, I sound like a real facetious dick at the moment, but I just like to point out these things that, you know, look, players will get worse, players will get better, but Hal Neto, getting better as the season goes on. Imagine that. Not much else to really talk about from the Jazz. 13 minutes for Joe Ingles for 6 points. On the Suns, we didn't get a big Alex Len game, much to my disappointment. 5-3-2 with a block in 15 minutes, while Tyson Chandler went 10-14 in 25. I still think that Len is worth holding on to for the next couple of weeks to see what plays out, but that looks like it's got timeshare written all over it. There is no timeshare for Devin Booker at the moment. 18-3-1. 2 triples and a steal, has to be owned. Archie Goodwin has to be owned at least until Brandon Knight comes back. 14-6-3 with a 3 and a block, and he is really turning this opportunity into a chance to resurrect or continue his NBA career, because it was looking like he could be out of the league with some of the way that, or not even the way that he's played, the way that he hasn't been played. Jordy McRae played 10 minutes for 3 points. Looks like he's fizzling out after a hot start because they gave recent 10-day signee Orlando Johnson 19 minutes, who had 7 points in that time. Maybe he gets signed for the rest of the year. Maybe McRae does, but both of them are just literally 30-team league guys at the moment. I do own Jordy McRae in the Red Rock Dynasty League for the remainder of the season. I think I paid $2 for him. I'll see how that plays out. Mirza Teletovic had 15 points in his 20 minutes with 3 triples. He's a decent source of threes, and that's probably about it. But what about Markieff Morris? If you don't own him and he's available in your league, he has to be owned. 17, 7, and 8, 2 triples, 1 steal, 2 blocks. 6 of 22 shooting is far from ideal, but he has been in red-hot form. Earl Watson does love him. A trade could be coming. Absolutely no doubt a trade could be coming. If it doesn't, I love what he's going to do the rest of the season. He could go to a team like Toronto, like the Wizards, and find himself in a 32-minute role there as well, and put up numbers that are equivalent to this. Has to be owned. I don't think there's any way you can avoid owning him at this point unless your team is super stacked, which I know some of you guys, your team is ridiculously stacked, and you'll send me an email. Who do I drop out of this? Oh, my worst player is Nick Batum. And I look at it and I go, shit, your worst player is Nick Batum because your rest of your team is stacked with top 50 players. And I go, you know what? Probably don't need to add Markieff Morris then. But for the normal unsuperhuman traders and drafters, you generally can find a spot for him on your roster. That's it. That's the games done for Saturday. I'm going to take a quick break now, and then we're going to be back to look at DFS for Super Bowl Sunday. I saw your picture today. we're going to be talking DFS for Super Bowl Sunday. Obviously, with the Super Bowl on Sunday night, all of the games are very, very early. So if you're living in Australia, like I am, be prepared to set your alarm for a very early start if you want to watch these games and then settle in for some Super Bowl action if you're lucky enough to have the day off work, because it will be a Monday here. So Super Bowl Sunday, for you guys that don't know, is a Super Bowl Monday here in Australia. So early games, if you're playing on Moneyball, don't forget the games, the lineups are going to lock very early. Set your alarms to get some action happening. The first game of the night, or of the day, yeah, of the day, the Denver Nuggets and the New York Knicks. Mallow is the one we need to look at here. He's dealing with that knee issue. He missed the last game. He might miss again. He's currently listed as questionable. Obviously, he has a big impact on the way that this game runs. Mike Miller is questionable for Denver. Please, don't worry about it. Jameer Nelson is out, so that means more Randy Foy minutes and more Emmanuel Mudiay minutes. And Darrell Arthur is questionable with a quad issue. He's been really injury-prone this season, so I'm not counting on him playing. Now, people like the format from yesterday where I broke down each game by position, so let's stick with that. Point guards in this one, I think that there's value from both of these guys. Emmanuel Mudiay is priced at 5,400. He dropped 36 in the last game. It's not like Jose Calderon and Langston Galloway are going to be great defensive options. I think that probably not 35 is where he's at, but 26 to 27. That's what he's averaging, 27 across his last five. And at 5,400, that's bang on where you need to be. His lowest score in those last five has been 20 points. Definitely fine with using him. If you want to go with a little bit cheaper, Jose Calderon is at 4,400. Calderon's defense isn't the best. Mudiay's isn't also. So, yeah, Calderon played big minutes in the last game for the Knicks, put up 33 points. Now, again, I don't expect him to put up 33, but at 4,400, can you get 22 minutes? Especially if Mallow's out, he becomes even more of an interesting guy who gets some extra touches and extra usage if Mallow happens to be out, because it also pushes Langston Galloway to play more two and three and not playing the point guard. Now, if Mallow plays, it means Calderon's a more risky proposition because maybe they play more Galloway at the one, and that limits what Calderon can do. So there is a bit more risk associated with using Jose. Mudiay feels a lot safer and more of a solid cash game and a tournament option. At the shooting guard spot, Langston Galloway, the aforementioned Langston Galloway, 4,500 for him. The minutes have been really good for him. 34 minutes over the last three, 18 points. That's not great. If Mallow's out, I don't mind using him because it's a nice positive matchup against Denver. But apart from that, I don't think there's a huge amount of love in him. Aaron Aflalo, 5,100, former team, revenge game factor, maybe. He is just up and down, though. He's averaging 26 points across his last three, which is solid. If Mallow's out, I'd be more inclined to use him, but I can't really get behind using him in a cash game because he is just so up and down. Will Barton's at 5,900 on the Denver side of things. He's been a lot better recently, 27.8 average across the last three. And at 5,900, though, that's still not quite enough. I would throw him into a tournament, but really, his numbers aren't quite where it needs to be at 5,900, just especially when he can throw in a stinker as well. He had a 7-point game in his last five, and that really scares me off in cash, maybe a tournament. Gary Harris at 4,600, as much as I like him and as much as his numbers translate well in standard leagues, it doesn't really come across all that well in DFS. And Randy Foy is at 3,700. Randy Foy is, over his last three, he's averaging more than Gary Harris, almost 19 points a game. And at 3,700, that's not bad. Playing in a situation where Jameer Nelson's out, he can get hot. He can start hitting threes out of his ass. So he might be a 25-point guy. That can happen with Randy Foy. So not someone to be completely dismissive of in a tournament setting. Small forwards, if Mallow plays, I really like him. He's at 9,000, so it is expensive. But the matchup is beautiful going up against Danilo Gallinari. Him and Gallinari are both in a revenge game situation, but I don't think that really counts given that they were traded 2, 3, 4 years ago, whenever it was. Mallow, though, is almost a 40 average across his last three. At 9,000, I think this is a nice matchup for him. 7,100 for Gallinari, it's not bad. It's not great. He needs to really get to the line a lot, which we obviously can do as I highlighted on yesterday's show, but not sure that I really want to spend up too much for him on this one. Lance Thomas has already been ruled out as well. He's still dealing with a concussion. The power forward position, Derek Williams at 4,000. If Mallow's out, he gets some extra run maybe. Strictly a tournament because literally he is averaging 6 points across his last three games. And the minutes haven't been there. Even in the last game when Mallow didn't play, he put up 4 points in 16 minutes. Did not get the run. Definitely don't want to use him in cash. But we know he can go big. He's had like 40-point games like the last time Mallow missed time. But really sort of out of favor as things are currently happening. my boy, rookie wall, Kristaps
Porzingis.
He is at 6,400. He dropped 38 in the last game. Yes, he'd been poor, but it doesn't get much better than a Denver front court matchup. If Mallow is out, I like what Porzingis can do here. I think that he can put up, you know, at 6,400, I think he can go for 30 relatively comfortably. I think he's one of the more intriguing power forwards on the board. There is definitely risk associated with him, so he leans a little bit more GPP. But with only four games on, maybe you have to take a bit more of a risk in cash. Ken Faried at 6,100. He's consistent, but he's consistent at like 25 points. And that's not... it's not returning value on that salary. He hasn't reached 30 points once in his last five games. And 30 points at 6,100 is not even 5x, and he can't even reach that. So his minutes aren't going to be there. His minutes are reduced this year. He's just no good. That's just who Kenneth Faried is. And maybe that seems a bit harsh, but he's just not going to demand 30 minutes a night because he's just not good enough for it. The Atlanta Hawks and the Orlando Magic. The Hawks are favored by 2.5. The total here is 201.5. Toby Harris is dealing with a cut on his eye. He will play. Don't think we need to be too concerned about that. And Tiago Splitter has been ruled out with Atlanta with this back, calf, hip, whatever. His back and legs are stuffed. He's going to be an up and down guy for probably the majority of his career with these back issues, which is a shame because I do really like Tiago Splitter. I think he's a really smart player and he can do quite a lot. And in a decent role, he can be a really good fantasy contributor as well. The point guards in this one, it's a matchup between Jeff Teague and Lord Alfred Payton. Payton has been abjectly horrible. He's at 5,200. I would not be pointing any sort of faith in him doing or coming anywhere close to where he needs to be. And Jeff Teague is now at 6,100. He's been putting up nice numbers. He's averaging 31 across his last five, 33 across his last three. Lower score has been 23. Really, really, you know, getting more minutes and looking a lot more productive. At 6,100, he has to be in consideration. Dennis Schroeder's at 48. The numbers have been good lately, averaging to almost 22 across his last three, but it's not quite enough, and he'd need something to happen to Teague to really suck or to have, you know, a big injury or sprain his ankle or a massive blowout for Schroeder to have any sort of, you know, hope of getting to 25 points. And I'm not all that keen on trying that out. The shooting guards in this one, Kyle Korver, I think we can pretty much forget about him. He's at 3,700, so the salary is appealing, but when's he going to do it? How often is he going to do it? Not often is going to be the answer. Tournaments only, not for cash. Vic Oladipo, 6,500. He's averaging almost 40 across his last three, 32 across his last five. I reckon he is a pretty nice option, especially if Payton struggles and he gets the ball in his hands more often. And the minutes have been well up for him as well, averaging 37 across his last three. Wasn't his greatest night in the last one, but I imagine that he bounces back. I do like him. Evan Fournier at 4,600 had a big game, dropped 28 fantasy points in a pretty big 32-minute role off the bench in the last game. But previous to that, he was struggling to even get to 20 minutes. He is maybe a punt in a tournament, and that's about it. And not many other shooting guards have too much interest for me. The small forward position, we look at Kent Bazemore, who's at 5,100, had a big game in the last one, putting up 32 points. This is a really nice matchup for him going up against Toby Harris. He's at 5,100. Can he get to 25 points? I know I have my doubts about Bazemore, but I think he's a pretty nice play at this spot. Thabo Sefolosha is at 3,900. That's an appealing salary, and the matchup's appealing, but I don't really want to get involved with him. And Toby Harris, for as okay as his numbers look, they just don't do it for DFS. 5,500, his highest score in his last five is 27 points. It's just not enough at 5,500 for that to be a maximum, especially when you're only averaging 21. It's just not happening for me. And Mario Hezonja, he's at min salary. He's been definitely playing above that lately, his role has been improved lately. I don't want a cash game look at him, but in a tournament, maybe he gets hot. Maybe he drops 25. He's had a 23-point game in the last five. He is someone to consider, but I'm not overly excited about him. The power forward spot, I think there's a lot of value here. Paul Millsap at 7,800. Big men have been feasting on the Magic. He is an awesome player. He's less than 8,000 now, which really, really intrigues me. I think that here is 40-point upside here with Millsap in this game, so I'm all over that. Aaron Gordon has been really struggling. I imagine his ownership will be low. He's priced under 5,000. He's at 4,900. He's had a 47-point game in the last five. It's pretty good. He's also had a 10-point game. That's really bad. So in cash games, Gordon, it makes a lot of sense. No, sorry, in tournament plays, he makes a lot of sense. In cash games, There's obviously risk involved. He has struggled the last three games, but I'm feeling it for him against Atlanta. Atlanta aren't a great defensive team against big men. Big men can go off. Big men can grab rebounds. He's looking at a double-digit rebound night here. I think he can go for some steals and some blocks. Yeah, he's someone that I like, despite what his recent form is telling me. Channing Frye didn't even see the rotation in the last game, so obviously there's not much to like with him. The center position, we're talking Al Horford, we're talking Nick Vucevic here. Vucevic is priced at 7,800. That's not overly expensive, but his numbers haven't quite been there lately, really struggling on the rebound portion of things. 32 average across the last three is okay, but it's not quite 7,800 value, but he's a nice, solid cash game center. Al Horford's at 7,100. Yeah, he's not there for me at the moment. The salary's nice, but once he drops under 7,000, I think I'll be all over it. His upside is there, but I'd rather spend the extra 700 on Vucevic because I know his upside is bigger and he's probably going to be more consistent with it as well. The next game, the Sacramento Kings and the Boston Celtics. There is no spread for this game. We do not know the status of Rajon Rondo, he's currently probable with a toe issue. Rudy Gay, who's doubtful with an ankle sprain. DeMarcus Cousins, who is doubtful with a wrist issue. Ben McLemore, who's doubtful with a wrist issue. And DeMarcus Cousins is probable with an ankle issue. So obviously a few injuries for us to monitor here. It looks like Boogie will play. He's obviously the biggest name there. And Rudy Gay won't. That'd be my estimation. And Rondo will be ready to go. Now, Rondo, former team. Is there something in this? Isaiah Thomas, former team. Is there something in that? I'd say yes to both. Isaiah Thomas has a massive, massive chip on his shoulder about lots of things about the way he was treated, especially in Sacramento. He is priced at 7,800. He is averaging 34 points across his last five. He can be a 50-point guy, and against a Kings team who has been horrendous lately and his defense has been porous, this is looking like the Isaiah Thomas matchup. Rajon Rondo at 8,400. Yes, he's got Boston revenge factor, but they just destroy point guards. So forget about Rondo in this matchup. At 8,400, he needs to go for 40-plus points anyway, and I just don't like his chances of doing it in this one. Darren Collison's not a terrible option, 4,800, but again, if it wasn't Boston, I'd be more intrigued with using him. And Marcus Smart at 5,300 had a couple of down games, but if there's going to be a game that he goes big, Sacramento is one of them. He can go for 35 points. With what he's able to do with the steals and the aggressive rebounding and the assists and the threes, all that sort of stuff, he can get pretty big scores, but I'm only going to be looking at that in tournaments. The shooting guard position with McLemore unlikely to play. Marco Bellinelli should see 35-plus minutes. He hasn't really had big games. His best score in his last five has been 30, which is good, especially at 4,000. There's been a couple of stinkers mixed in there, but I reckon he is the best low-priced shooting guard on the board. Avery Bradley at 5,500. He's had a bit of a quiet run lately, but this matchup doesn't get much easier for shooting guards. At 5,500, he doesn't really need to do much to achieve that sort of level, so I reckon he is in play as well. And not much else, I think, really tickles our fancy here. The small forward battle. Rudy Gay is likely out, so we're going to see more minutes for Omri Caspi. He hasn't been getting it done lately. He's at 5,100, so he has to come into consideration, because if he can get 32 or 33 minutes, we know that he can put up big numbers, but it just hasn't been happening for him lately, despite the fact that he's been getting 26 minutes over the last five. Hasn't been producing quite where he needs to be. Not all are that keen on him. Jay Crowder at 5,900 hasn't been producing anywhere near his value lately. I'd leave him out of it, but a guy who has been smashing value is Evan Turner. 5,900 for him. If I'm choosing between him and Crowder, it's definitely Turner I'm looking at. He's got a 36-point average across his last three. He's averaging 32 across his last five. He dropped 43 in the last game. The matchup's positive. They're running with him those 28, 29 minutes. He's producing. He's facilitating. Evan Turner is on a hot streak, and he is definitely someone that can be used. The power forwards, I don't want anything to do with Celtics big men. Jared Sullinger, Amir Johnson, Jonas Jerebko, Kelly Olynyk, Tyler Zeller. I don't want anything to do with them. I just don't know who is going to be best on each night. If I want to throw one of them into a tournament, it's going to be probably Sullinger, who's been getting a little bit more production lately. He's averaging almost 21 across the last five. He dropped 31 in the last game, but it's strictly for tournaments. You can't use these guys in cash because you don't know what's going to happen. Willie Cauley-Stein at 4,300. If Gay is out, I feel more confident in him getting closer to 30 minutes. He had 25 in the last game in 29 minutes. At 4,300, he comes into play, probably more of a GPP guy, but if Gay is out, I'd feel more confident in using him in cash games. At center, well, the big man's there, DeMarcus Cousins. He's priced at 11,100. Yes, it is big, but there are no other real big price players on the board for Sunday, so you probably can afford putting Cousins in at 11,000 and then throwing some other low price guys in the other positions. Kelly Olynyk has been really tailing off lately. He's at 4,600. Fine, in a tournament, we know what he can do. He can go for 40 or 45, but with now five big men in the rotation, Brad Stevens is doing his best to screw over anyone of having a consistent role. Tyler Zeller at 3,900, he's been playing well lately. I don't mind him throwing in as a low price center as well. At 3,900, when you're averaging 24 across the last three games, that's really impressive, and it's definitely smashing value. The last game of the night, the Los Angeles Clippers and the Miami Heat. The Heat are favored by one. The total is 197. Austin Rivers is now out for the next 4 to 6 weeks with a broken hand. I tweeted it out before and got a few jokes back. Who did he punch? Unfortunately, we can't make that joke this time because he didn't punch anyone. He got injured in a game. You'd like to think that... No, I won't say that. He got injured during a game. He's out for the next 4 to 6 weeks. That just means we're going to see more Jamal Crawford. So now Crawford, with the extra run he'd been getting with Griffin out, and now the extra run he's going to get with Rivers out, if you're looking for scoring and some free throw boosts and some three-pointers, in standard leagues, you have to look at him, and he becomes more of a valuable player in DFS as well, with that extra minutes that he is going to have to take up because we know how poor their wing situation is. Goran Dragic is at 5,700. He's averaging almost 29 across the last three. If it wasn't for the matchup with Chris Paul, I think he's a nice play, and even then, he's still not a horrible option on a limited slate. Chris Paul is at 9,600. The salary is starting to come down. Not a good matchup for him as well, but I mentioned there's not many high-priced guys. I do not like Chris Paul here in this spot. His numbers, they've been consistent, but his highest scorer of his last five is 40.8, which is all right, but when you're spending 10,000, it's not quite where it needs to be. His lowest score is 33.7, so that's awesome. What do you do? I'm okay with using him, but he's definitely not my first choice. I need to build every lineup around having Chris Paul, and he's not that sort of guy, given the way that his numbers have been a little bit suppressed of late. The shooting guard spot, JJ Redick, is great in a tournament at 4,800. He dropped 25 in the last game, but 30 points feels like it's about his ceiling. At 4,800, Jamal Crawford has been outperforming him of late. And again, he's going to get these extra minutes. He's averaging 32 across the last three. His lowest score in the last five is 22, which is more than what Redick is averaging. If I'm spending 4,800, it is definitely Crawford that I'm getting out there. Dwayne Wade at 7,800. That's a pretty high salary. He's averaging 32 across the last three. I don't mind getting Wade in at that price. I think that 35 points is definitely something that's in reach for him. And Lance Stephenson at 3,600. He is going to get some extra run with Rivers out. He dropped 20 in the last game. I don't trust Lance with anything, so I don't trust him in a cash game lineup. But in a tournament, he could have 28 points. He could have 35 points. That's not ludicrous. It's a bit funny, but it's not stupid. So he is a player that you can have a look at and you can throw in and see, because look, less than 4,000 is pretty cheap. Small forwards. Wes Johnson's at 4,200. For as good as his game is in a standard league, it doesn't translate that well to DFS. And 21 average is not bad, but it's not brilliant. Luol Deng, who was hot with Whiteside back, has dropped off. We can leave him alone. But I'll tell you who I do like. Justice Winslow, the former holder of the least with most award, is averaging almost 23 points a game in the last three. And that doesn't sound sexy, but at 4,400, it's not bad. And I feel confident with him in a cash game being able to give me 23 points, and again, that's just nice, solid value, and enables you to build a pretty nice lineup around him. Paul Pierce, no thanks. And Luke Marmuta, yeah, you're joking. Maybe he's the contender for the least with the most. Luke Marmuta, he is just really bad from a statistical point of view. Chris Bosh at 7,400 hasn't really been getting it done as of late. When you're only averaging 29 across the last five, you want to be spending less than 7,400. His highest score across those last five is only 36.7, so that's not a massively high score. I reckon you can probably do better than Bosch. There's not much else in the power forwards in this game. Amari Stoudemire is a power forward on FanDuel. He's at 4,400. You imagine he's still going to have somewhat of a role, but I think it probably drops a couple more minutes in this game, and that's probably going to be enough to take him out of any usefulness in lineups. The last spot is the center position. A couple of big names here. Hassan Whiteside's at 8,000. He had a triple-double in the last game, and it gave him 40 points. So it wasn't massive, but you feel confident you can get 35 points out of Whiteside on most nights. There is a bit of a risk involved with it. Now, do you spend the extra 500, 8,500, and take DeAndre Jordan, who's averaging 47 across his last three? If it's me, I probably do. I think that Jordan stays on the court for longer. The extra 5 or 6 minutes that he gets over Whiteside could be key. He's got a higher max in his last five, a much higher floor. He is the guy that I'm spending up on, although Whiteside is not a terrible option. All right, let's have a look at the DFS picks of the day. At point guard, Jose Calderon, 4,400, Emmanuel Mudiay at 54, and Isaiah Thomas at 78. At shooting guard, Marco Bellinelli, 4,000, Vic Oladipo, 6,500, and I didn't really like a high-priced shooting guard. The only one who's really on the board is Dwayne Wade, and I've maybe talked myself into him a little bit more at 7,800. Small forwards, Justice Winslow, 44, Kent Bazemore, 5,100, and Carmelo Anthony, 9,000, if healthy, obviously. Power forwards, Aaron Gordon, 4,900.
Percentages.
At 6,400, and Paul Millsap at 7,800, and the centers. Tyler Zeller in a punt tournament option, 3,900. My boy Nikola Jokic at 6,400, and DeMarcus Cousins at 11,100. Now, I'm thinking, I didn't do the centers in the Knicks Denver game. My humblest apologies. Let's bring them up and do them now. Can't believe I missed it. All right, Nikola Jokic. Hey, he's at 6,400. Obviously, I like him a lot. He's averaged 37 points across the last three games. It's not a great matchup, but I'm definitely fine with getting him out there. And Robin Lopez has been on fire. 5,600 for him, averaging 35. The matchup is really positive. I'm definitely okay. Both of those guys are in play for me as centers for tournaments and for cash games. Sorry about missing that game. I don't know how that happened. Anyway, we are done here, guys. I don't know why, but the last two podcasts have gone massively over time. So I apologize if you're thinking, what is this guy droning on about? Why the hell is he talking for an hour and a half a day? I don't know what it is. Does anyone know why these podcasts are dragging on? I'll have to go back and listen through it. Let me know if there's too much superfluous bullshit that I'm putting in there, or maybe you like it at an hour and a half. I don't know. I don't know why it's going so long. I do apologize. Anyway, follow me on Twitter, on the Twitter handle you can see below on the screen if you're watching on YouTube. If you are listening, you can't see it, and it is redrock_beeble. That is the same as the Instagram account where you can go to enter the Instagram daily contest, and there is facebook.com/redrockbasketball. Of course, Basketball Monster, the leader in fantasy basketball tools, analytics, content for seasonal and daily leagues. Make sure you're checking out basketballmonster.com and Hardwood Paroxysms for all your funny, serious, analytical, interesting, detailed articles on the NBA. Plenty of brilliant writers over at Hardwood Paroxysm and on the Hardwood Paroxysm network of sites and podcasts, where there's a stack of podcasts that go up there as well. We're done. I don't think I've got anything else to mention. Good luck in your matchups tomorrow. For the Monday's podcast, we are going to be doing trade talk. So send in your trades, whether they've just been executed, whether they're proposed, and I'll go through one of them in detail on the podcast. I'll send out a reminder Facebook post and a reminder tweet about that tomorrow. You can send them in, and that will be discussed on tomorrow's podcast. We're done. That's it. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.